Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place final table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Hi, and welcome to the show. Tonight, an extended conversation Dennis, Joe, and I had with Corey Zeidman, a poker pro who does not mind speaking his mind. His mouth has gotten him into trouble a couple of times, but it's also made him famous for an incident where he talked down Phil Hellmuth, where he got into it with Jennifer Harmon and was accused of slow-rolling her, and a couple of classic episodes of high-stakes poker as well. And you'll hear that interview in just a couple of minutes. Don't forget that next week we are moving the show to Tuesdays at 2 o'clock Central Time on 590 The Fan KFNS. This won't affect those of you who listen to the podcast on thechipleader.com, but if you want to hear the show live on the radio, it'll be Tuesdays at 2 on 590 The Fan KFNS from the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis. This opening segment of our show is brought to you by One Time Apparel. One time. Let me have it hit one time. Let me have it hold up one time. You hear it said at the poker tables all the time. Now you can literally have it on your body. The one-time t-shirts and hats and hoodies from onetimeapparel.com. It's clothing designed with a poker player like you in mind. Go to the website, onetimeapparel.com. Ladies, take a look at the scoop neck t-shirts. Guys, take a look at the ringer t-shirts. If you're interested in organic clothing, we've got the organic fashion fit t-shirt there as well. He's got twill caps and flex fit pro caps and camouflage hats in pink for the ladies. All right there at onetimeapparel.com. This company was founded by Kevin Steffen, a friend of ours from St. Louis, who's a longtime poker player who wanted clothing for poker players like him and you. And now we've got it at onetimeapparel.com. Go there, charge it to your credit card, use PayPal, and then wear it at the tables, and maybe that one time will hit for you. This is the Lumiere Place final table. Corey Zeidman coming right up on 590 The Fan KFNS and thechipleader.com.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Now, taking you from the flop to the river, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris talking poker at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to the Lumiere Place Final Table. I am Paul Harris. He's Dennis Phillips. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, is with us. And joining us in the guest chair is Corey Zeidman, who you've seen many times on Poker After Dark and on High Stakes Poker and in a famous matchup with Jennifer Harmon at the 2005 World Series of Poker, but also at the same table as Dennis and Joe at the 2009 main event.
Sounds like Mo, Larry, and Curly.
It does.
Might as well be.
The chair. It sounds like the electric chair.
Welcome to
this
the show.
Is the chair, huh?
Thanks for joining us here in the Dennis Phillips suite.
Good.
Corey, how were these guys at the table?
Well, Dennis came over kind of late in the day, but obviously his reputation precedes him. You know, Dennis is... He has a nice, light-mannered approach, which is sort of a disguise. He's always thinking. He's always paying attention, and you can't take him lightly. And Joe played solid poker all day long. He beat me up a number of times. Him and I were having a good time at the table, which is what I like to do regardless of the event. You know, you try and play poker, enjoy yourself. I play my best when I'm having a good time. I try and have a good time when I play, and Joe certainly was amicable as far as that's concerned. But, yeah, it... We had a pretty solid table, actually, throughout the day. I was hoping I picked Sunday to play, thinking Sunday would be the softest day of all. I don't know if that was your thinking on that.
I think too many people thought that.
I think
the good players, the good players all thought that, and then they all showed up. What happened at our table.
We outsmarted ourselves, right?
Well, actually, I came from a totally different table. I had to kind of shift gears a little bit. The first table I sat at, for the first time this entire series, I didn't recognize anybody else at the table. Wow. I was with no other pros, nothing. They played a little different than like you would play and everything. I obviously, I respect your game and the way you play it, and I would play you accordingly. These guys, literally one guy, any ace he had, he was raising with, and you couldn't push him out till the turn of the river, which was sweet until he caught.
Yeah, always sweet until
he caught. Oh, my gosh, yeah. another guy that thought he could outplay everybody after the flop, and he was raising every, not just continuation, he was also making a continuation on the turn even on it. And he caught cards. In fact, he sucked out twice on the river, got up to 70,000, went down to 20,000, went back to 50. And then I took a couple of pots from him. I think he left the table with about 20, and I wanted him to come with me. I really wanted to switch cards with somebody
bring
and say,
him along.
Please come with me.
Now, take him along. That's might, funny. Don't you wish?
This might bring up an interesting point with a player at our table,
yeah,
which I think got there before you did, but help me, Dennis.
He did. He was there right before
you. He was there right before you?
He sat between you and I.
He sat between you and I.
Correct.
He was in the three seat. You were in the two. I was in the four. Corey, you were in the
eight.
Eight.
Yeah. Yes.
So you know the player I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the three seat. Younger, kind of internet style, fearless, and you know, even when you came in, Corey, we were talking about him just for a second. We said, let's save him for the show. It's kind of a new trend. I've been talking a lot about it on the show, quite a bit, of these guys that push, raise, everything pre-flop, try to outplay each other, outplay other players and build up their chips. He really tried to take control of the table right when he got there. That was my impression for sure, obviously, by how he was raising. What did you think, and what do you think of that style?
Yeah, I mean, he changed the whole complexion of the table, in actuality. I mean, he was in on just about every hand. He actually summed it up when I was needling him a little bit about his style of play. He said, well, the game is called hold'em, not fold'em. You know, he wanted to get involved constantly, and, you know, you get involved with someone like that, it's a good opportunity, of course, to take their chips. But they're going to be relentless as far as their pressure. And when they finally do have a hand, if it's against you, you know, it gets pretty rough. And
they're fearless.
I mean, they really are fearless. They're playing it like they're playing with a bunch of buddies in their, you know, apartment back home. You know, if it's like a $20 sit and go or something like that. He's playing the main event like it doesn't even matter. And he's fearless. And I know that I changed my style a little bit when he came to the table. If I was going to enter a hand that he was involved with, I was going to try and let him make the mistakes, which is what I like to do in a situation like that. Use the aggression.
I like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what it's all about, because we know we can get coolered and get involved in a pot where, against you, in fact, Joe, I was happy to lose the minimum in that one pot where we flopped. I had ace-king, you had 4-5 in the big blind, 4-5
right.
of diamonds.
Right, which, by the way, I felt you were raising my big blind a lot, and you're way over in the 8. You
Isn't
thought I was
funny?
Raising your big blind a lot. I'm like, wait a minute, you're raising my big blind a lot. So that's why I called you with the
No, that's the kind of hand I like to call it.
I love this.
Yeah, no, we were going back and forth. It was good,
We were playing a lot of pots.
Yeah, we were.
A lot of pots.
Let me just stop you right there, because I want to ask about this, because this comes up a lot in poker games all over the place. A guy who always says, hey, that's my big blind you're raising. Hey, how come you're always raising my big blind? Are you purposely raising his big blind? Are you trying to make a move on his big blind, or is it just coincidental?
It could be either or. I mean, we all Absolutely. Pick on people we see opportunities against. I mean, if someone super tight, you're going to pick your spots. I'm going to steal the button from the button at times if the right person's in the big blind. It's nice to get easy chips. It really is. And with someone like Joe, though, it was purely coincidental. As a matter of fact, I didn't even realize I was raising your big blind a lot.
And that was the same with me with you, which was funny.
No, and I knew that.
Right. You know, it was like, and after a while, and even the person that was in the small blind with you, and one time I put my hand on the chips and I did it as a joke, and both you guys were like, oh, and I was like, I'm kidding. I'm folding. I realized
that. You did take me out that
time. Yeah, because I'm like, you know, these guys are, even the two players in between us, they're going to play back at me because they think I'm completely – and a couple times in the beginning I probably was raising a little light, and a couple times obviously I definitely had a hand. I didn't always have nothing.
No, of course.
But I felt you guys are going to play back at me now, and I don't want to put myself in that spot. And I had chipped up and caught a couple hands here and there. And like you wait for people to make mistakes. And you know, I caught one big cooler, which went my way early, where I flopped middle set. We don't know what the other guy had, but he had to have flopped a straight.
Yeah, that had to be a straight. Yeah, no, I'm sure.
So it was kind of a
– As a matter of fact, when you turned over your hand, I know the hand you're referring to. You turned over your hand. He didn't notice it was a full house. He obviously didn't realize the river paired because he was about to show his hand.
He was about to show his hand.
Right? You noticed that as well.
100% I noticed that as well.
So you knew it wasn't a flush, then it had to be the straight, because that would have been a flush card
as
well. So, that was, you know, it was an enjoyable table, though.
See, I love this. These guys are saying the same thing that I've said before. When you sit down at a table, I don't care if you've been there for 5 minutes or an hour, you have to analyze the people. You have to decide which ones you can push off the button, which ones you can push out of a pot, which ones you can't, which ones are going to be aggressive that you can trap. I mean, the whole bit like that. You used to remind me of something else. I was playing over at the Bellagio on the 5-diamond, and Umberto was across the table from me. Three straight times, he raised my big blind. And the third time, I must have given him a look and didn't even realize I did. He turned up 10 and says, no, not picking on, no. He'll show you.
You know, that's a great point, because there's times when I'm hoping, like if everyone falls to me and I'm on the button, I don't really want to give the impression that I'm just making a button raise.
Exactly.
Because now you're going to force them. You have a hand. You got to play it. You have to raise, of course. Matter of fact, there was a few times where two times where I just called, didn't even raise.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want them to think up. Because I really don't want to face a re-raise because they're getting pissed off that I'm raising
exactly.
the button.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can all of a sudden, you know, when you're, it's just small versus big in certain pots, and all of a sudden you guys build up a monster pot you didn't even intend on getting involved with.
It's also funny. A lot of times people ask me, hey, Joe, I want to run this hand by you. You know, what would you do? I say, okay, sure. What was the hand?
And I'll say, like Jason Alexander's hand?
Exactly.
I'll tell you about that later.
Did he do well? Someone said
actually, he's got about 89,000.
Wow.
Oh, I'll tell you about a hand in a minute. Go ahead, Joe. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, good stuff.
You'll love this one.
They'll ask me, I want to run this hand by you. Tell me what you think. I have to ask like 10 questions.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and they don't like it. They get arguing. Well, can I just – I had ace-jack, and should I raise on the button or
what would
not?
You do?
You know, what would you do?
Yeah.
I don't know what you would do. Have you raised the last 12 out of 15, and
it's
they think
so
you're
true.
Stealing? Are they playing back at you? How many chips did you have? How many chips did they have? Was there a big stack to your left? Was it short stacks? You know, what is
I
the
know,
situation?
There's so many questions.
There's too many variables to just say, oh, ace-jack, yeah, I'd raise.
Yeah.
You can't say that.
I know. And they ask you that question. I guess you ask advice all the time. It's impossible to give blanket advice.
Right.
It's ridiculous, in fact.
Otherwise, there'd only be one poker book.
Right.
Yeah.
Ace-jack, you raise this amount. You know?
Right. Yeah,
it
you're
just
in
doesn't
this
work
position.
That way, guys.
No.
It doesn't at all.
I've got to ask about you and Phil Hellmuth. when was
me and
this?
Phil Hellmuth, new sitcom, right?
When was this on Poker After Dark?
It was shown in January, and we filmed it like I don't know about 6 months before. I mean, you film these things, and you know the whole world changes six times before these things air and everything like that. Yeah, the Phil Hellmuth Poker After Dark episode.
Let me just lay some groundwork. They had some people who were, I guess, supposedly known for speaking up at the table.
Yeah, it was called Speak Your Mind.
Speak Your Mind, and it's you, Gabe Kaplan, Phil Hellmuth, Phil Gordon, Todd Brunson, and David Gray.
Yeah, I had some history with Gabe Kaplan. Him and I had some past history when he was critical of me on High Stakes Poker. And, of course, Phil Gordon, him and I, it seems like I have my share of confrontations because I'm pretty outspoken. I was writing for All In Magazine for a couple of years, and I was very controversial. I got under Mr. Pollock's skin and his crew at the World Series, and I was critical of different things in poker. I mean, that was my agreement when I wrote the column was I was going to be outspoken and wrote what I wanted to
Let
say.
Let Corey be Corey.
Exactly. I was going to just say it the way I feel it is, and I don't feel there's a need to be any other way. I mean, if you're gonna write a, I didn't want to write the monthly column that was just talking about how to play ace jack when I got off. You
right.
know? But so I had my share of things with Phil Gordon and not Phil Hellmuth though. Phil Hellmuth and I didn't have any past history, and he just has such a condescending way of talking to people, and he picked the wrong person. And right when we were about to start filming the show. He just talked to me in a manner where, even if it's unintentional, which I believe it was to some extent, he just has a way of talking to people who he feels aren't on his plane or plateau or however he thinks about it. Like I said, in just such a condescending manner. And I was like, don't talk to me that way is basically what happened. So one thing led to another. And I was brought on the show by the producers because I have a big mouth and I like to joke around and kid around. And I didn't know who my first target was going to be. I didn't have it planned. Some people thought I planned it.
I love the word target.
I love
the word target.
Well, I wanted to give the producers, some bang for their buck. I wanted to be entertaining. And so Phil Hellmuth decided to stand up and be counted. And it did go through my mind how he's embarrassed so many individuals on different telecasts. I'm like, something I'm not saying I did it primarily for that reason, but that all came into the equation. So I decided to ride him. And the more I rode him, the more entertaining it was, and the worse he played. Those of you who saw him play the worst poker of his life, positively gave away all his chips, and I received credit from the players at the table and the people that watched for making him give it all away.
Sheesh. Your poor wife. She's not poor now. not poor.
She's got plenty of money now.
Come on.
Something happens to Phil, she'll be good.
I went through an episode on The Odd Couple where Oscar called Felix an inane drone. And that just came back.
An inane drone?
Yeah. A dull bee.
I'd be surprised if they ever invited you back, Corey. You're rude to everybody. You're not even that funny, and you know, it's just all you do is attack. I think you look really bad, but...
Why'd you check twice?
I don't think you'll ever get invited back, if you want the truth.
You know, Phil, if I get invited back...
Why would they invite
you back?
It
would be nice. If I didn't, I'll somehow survive, Phil.
Our best conversations, you have to, like, get involved in every one.
Or they need to see your cards.
Excuse me?
Yeah, we need to see your cards.
Okay. The one was like a 7, and so what the hell?
One thing I would ask you to do, Corey, is...
Yes, what's that, Phil?
Anything. We're talking about is if we're having an interesting conversation
Phil,
about...
Phil, with the same tone for
you're
like
not,
5 minutes
you're
straight.
You're not going to let me... You're not going to even let me finish,
Phil. Phil, I've got news for you. I'll do what I'd like.
Wow.
All right?
Phil?
Has there been a fight, an actual physical
There's
encounter?
There's not going to be a fight.
On Poker After Dark.
Okay. No
if Sam Brizzle could take Phil, God only knows.
Do we have a suicide break coming up, Sam?
I saw the episode when it aired, and I thought to myself, this guy is putting, this, Corey is putting Phil on tilt. And it's televised. And the other guys at the table are loving it. That was the part that occurred to me, that these other four guys who probably have similar feelings about Phil, but don't go after him the way you did, we're probably loving that.
Yeah, I mean, so many poker players are so politically correct when it comes to the other, they're afraid to say anything. I'm not looking to say anything derogatory for no reason, but some are involved in different charity work, and which is great, of course, but some have associations and everything like that. But at the table, I mean, we're playing to win. It's war. If you see you're getting under someone's skin, you're going to continue to ride them. I wasn't looking to go over the line, but it went back and forth. And like I said, I was having a good time. I enjoyed it. It was fun to do.
Did something happen off camera that we didn't see? You told us what happened before the show, but I know that these shows are heavily edited. I have a feeling there was more than what we
actually
saw.
Actually, there was more that you. What there is some you didn't see. He actually came back on stage to shake my hand after he got knocked off. They edited that out for whatever reason. And even when he came up to me to shake my hand, like we were making peace, whatever, he didn't even look at me. It was all about camera time. You know, I mean, that's Phil.
But that was like last year when he apologized to the guy when he berated him.
You're an idiot.
That's my point. You know, it was all for him, and he went up for this horrible apology.
It is.
It really wasn't an apology.
How can you insult somebody while you're apologizing?
Right.
To
it was terrible.
Yeah. So you know, that's him.
It's all along that line.
But there's one other thing I got to ask you about. At the time of the blow-up that we have the audio from,
okay,
it's you and Gabe Kaplan in a hand. I don't know if
right.
I don't know if you remember the hand.
I do remember the hand because Gabe was thinking about re-raising, he had said. Is that the hand you're talking
about? You had, I think, ace 5 and had raised, and it come around, and he had limped, and he called with a pair of 9s, and it was check, check on the flop, check, check on the turn, even though you
and
turned
then I bet
an ace.
The river. Yes.
You turned,
I turned
an, ace.
An ace.
He checked, and then you bet the river. $1,800 mm-hmm. into about a $4,600 pot
yep,
at that point.
I remember the hand. I think I had ace 4.
I think it was ace 4.
Okay, so you've got the aces. He's got the 9s. The board was something like ace, king, 7, 6, whatever.
Yeah, I remember
blanks.
Turning the ace. It was check, check.
Right. And while you and Phil are going at it, in the middle of the audio, you can hear Gabe say, "Why would you check twice then bet 1800?" And no one says anything. No one even is thinking about the fact that there's a hand going on.
Yeah, we don't want to interrupt.
Thousands of dollars are at play, but we don't care because the Corey versus Phil thing is too much fun.
Yeah, it's all got to be about Phil. No, it always about Phil.
But were you thinking while you were doing the thing with Phil, gee, I hope Gabe calls me here because he obviously
doesn't
have to
beef. I'm totally aware. We are. We, you know, like I said about Dennis, I've only played with Dennis, you know, a little bit, but we're aware of every detail. Those of us who talk at the table, we know everything that's going on. We're aware of every detail, or at least I know I try to be aware of every detail.
Oh, you got to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I might be talking, you know, to Phil, but I'm watching Gabe out of the corner of my eye to try and pick up a tell in case he, you know, comes over the top on me or something, or if he's looking for a weakness. We try and pick up on every detail.
And the only thing, too, I can add about that is sometimes – someone might walk by or watch me from the rail or something, a friend or my wife, and say, "Geez, why aren't you paying attention?" Well, I pay so much attention I have to take mental breaks at the table. I have to put my head down, rub my temples, just not pay attention to anything. If it's a small pot or not much going on, I have to, because in the past, you know, these sessions are so long.
Yeah.
You know, the breaks and the days are so long, and it's so important. It's the main event. It's the Super Bowl of the deal. By the last two levels, I'll end up with a migraine. I'll end up where, in the past, I would give away
I'm
some
I'm glad
chips.
You're telling me this in case we're at the same table together.
You'll be able to look this over and say, boy, it looks like Joe's on a mental break. I'm raising his blind.
Oh, yeah.
I'm raising his blind.
You a little more than what table you at tomorrow?
I'm going to try to be nice. I'm going to try to be nice.
I am ethical. If I know people at your table, I'm not going to tip them off. You have my word. But it's true. It's tiring.
Yeah,
it's
it
mentally
tiring.
Draining.
And you pay attention so much, you know. Sometimes there's only so much you can actually do. I think you could overdo it, which I think I have done in the past, mm-hmm. which I try not to do anymore.
This is a Lumiere Place Final Table with Paul Harris, Dennis Phillips, and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan, talking with poker professional Corey Zeidman, who's made a name for himself not just with his play in No Limit Hold'em and in stud, but also with his mouth, as you've heard in the Phil Hellmuth story, and also a very famous YouTube clip of him from a World Series broadcast of a few years ago that led to him being accused of slow-rolling Jennifer Harmon. We'll get to that in the next segment. But first, a reminder that next week, October 13th, this broadcast will move to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. This, of course, won't affect those of you who listen to us on demand with the podcasts on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, which you can listen to each week and catch up with any of the podcasts that you've missed. But if you're listening to the show live on 590 The Fan KFNS, it'll be from 2 to 3 Tuesday afternoons, Central Time, in St. Louis. So we hope you'll join us at that new time on 590 The Fan KFNS. And by the way, if you want to follow Dennis on Twitter, it's Dennis_Phillips. If you want to follow me, it's Paul Harris Show. If you want to follow Joe, it's Joe Poker Coach. And we also take your email questions anytime to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. All right, all of that out of the way, a word about one of our sponsors, and then we're back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table.
This portion of the show brought to you by PokerStars.net. So you want to be a poker player. Well, I'm telling you, the best way to do that is to download PokerStars.net and start your practicing, because right there, guys, that's where I'm at. That's where a lot of people start. That's where you're going to learn the game. If you want to be successful at this, go to PokerStars.net, download the software, start playing. It's great, 24/7, any kind of game and at any kind of level. PokerStars.net, guys. Find the poker star in you.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Hey, speaking of Lumiere Place, this is the casino in downtown St. Louis where Dennis and I play quite often. We're here every Tuesday for the big 5-10 game, and probably both be here this Saturday for their monthly $325 buy-in No Limit Texas Hold'em tournament. It goes the second Saturday of every month. It's a great deep stack event with 5,000 in chips and 45-minute levels and a prize pool of, I think last time it was over $13,000. And if you're coming to Lumiere for more than poker, they've got great table games and great restaurants and a terrific show here as well called Legends in Concert. And coming up next month in the Lumiere Theater, they've got Travis Tritt. He'll be here on November 13th, and there are still a few tickets available for that show, available through Ticketmaster. All right, back now to our conversation with poker professional Corey Zeidman. I want to ask you another question, Corey, about the people who are at a table. Because when I went over to the Sweat Joe, you saw me come over a couple of times. I was playing a cash game, and I came over to – I was checking on both of these guys at their tables.
It reminded me of how serious – my first World Series main event was in 2003. And it's not that I don't take it as seriously, but it just showed me, you know, it's good. It's to your advantage to really try your best to be absolutely as focused as possible at all times. And you guys obviously help each other every way you can, which – if there's ever been a time to do it in poker, this is it.
Yeah. Well, when I came over, at the beginning, Joe said, I can't believe the draw I got here. Look at this table. I got Corey Zeidman here. I know this guy's a pro. I know this guy's a pro. This guy over here, I know, is a very tough player, and he's pointing to various people at the table. He says, I wish I was at the table behind us. I don't know anybody there. I think they're all amateurs over there. I'd much rather be there. And he and I got into a discussion about which was better, which is more of a minefield. When you play in a big event like this, and you're going to have thousands of people who are nowhere near the level that you are, what would you prefer to have at your table?
I like known players more. I do. Sure, I'd like amateurs just throwing away their chips all the time. But the more I know about the players, the better it is, I feel.
When you see that, Mike Sexton was in here, and he said the exact opposite. He says he wants to be able to get free chips. He knows it's a minefield. He knows there's a chance to get knocked out. But give me nine amateurs who don't know what they're doing. I'll take it any day.
Well, I guess, you know, you got to take it. You have to take it case by case. You know, I definitely don't want nine amateurs or eight other players at the table that are amateurs. I usually like maybe two. You know, like two guys that are going to give
see,
it
now
away.
You're saying the same thing Joe said. He loves the mixture. Get about three pros and three amateurs.
Yeah.
You know, you can shift your game. You know, you will have mutual respect, like when Umberto showed me the tens that time, things like that.
Sure. Yeah, it's like a professional courtesy.
I'll have to admit, the table a little bit.
It is a little bit. The first table I was at, when I didn't know any of these guys and the way they were playing, it actually was very difficult. I was praying for cards and all that stuff, but... It was very difficult.
No,
you couldn't put a move on a guy that doesn't know a move.
Exactly. That's the problem.
You know.
No, you can't put a bluff on someone who doesn't know how to lay a hand
I made
down.
A bet out the guy should have laid down in a heartbeat, and he called me. He's like, never mind.
Of course, that's very dangerous.
But, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, that's why the first few hours. I mean, the most important thing, I'm sure we all agree, is knowing your players.
Absolutely.
That's got to be number one. And but, you know, having two, maybe three weak players at the table is a good thing. But a full table of players like that. No, that's nightmares.
You'd like to really be playing 7-on-2, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good combination.
Well, because these guys also overbet pots. I mean, you know, you can have a monster. You don't know where they're coming from. I mean, you'll see a guy make a monster raise with pocket aces, and let's say you have pocket queens, and you put in a raise. He comes over the top for a ridiculous sum. You would think maybe someone would want some action. You know, maybe have a heads-up situation with aces. Boy. You know, how can a guy raise that much if he has aces or kings? And he's doing it, you know?
I have maybe a funny question for you here. And this is one that you may have a great reason. In general in poker, the slow roll is considered, that's like the worst thing you could ever do. And this is something just poking around. I want to, you know, work with you with this interview. And we played yesterday a lot, but I want to pull up the history. And it pulls up slow roll, Jennifer Herman slow roll.
2005 World Series of Poker.
Which I saw with you. Now, what happened? You have 8-9 of diamonds. She has pocket queens.
That is my favorite hand, by the way.
Okay.
8-9 of diamonds.
Okay.
And I did say that at the table, yeah.
I can see why after then. You flop a straight, the low end of the straight. It was 10, jack,
yeah, she queen. made a raise in early position, pre-flop. Okay. So I know she has a hand. Anytime someone raises, especially, you know, Jennifer Harmon in early position, they have a hand.
Right.
You know, it was early. I decided to call with the 8-9 of diamonds, and yes, queen, jack, 10, rainbow came up. So I flopped the low end of the straight. She flopped a set of queens, and I'm trying to recount the betting. And so she came out with a bet. I'm trying to remember what she bet now.
Maybe about 60% of the pot.
Yeah, she bet, I think, 1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I raised it because I wanted to take it down there. I think I made it 3,000.
Well, again, low end of the straight, your danger, an ace, a king, anything comes up there, you're in trouble.
Yeah, she can have ace, king. I actually wanted to find out where I stood at that point.
Sure.
So I raised. Things hadn't been going well that day. I had started the hand with like 70-something, 100 in chips. In those days, we started with 10,000 in chips. And I made it 3,000, and she thought, and she called. So now I'm a little concerned about the ace, king, because if I was her and I had ace, king, I'm just going to smooth call at that point.
There you go.
You know, because you're fearless. I mean, there's no flush draws
it's
out there.
It's a rainbow flop.
That's a rainbow flop.
Right.
On the turn, the 10 of diamonds comes.
Pairing the board and giving you the straight flush draw.
Give me the open end, the straight flush draw.
Yes.
Now, I had
giving
been at
her the not full house.
Yeah, giving her queens full. Yep.
Okay.
Yep, giving her queens full. I had been, I have to add this quickly, I had been at the dentist. I had a problem with, I had a root canal done. And I was on painkillers. It's like an OJ defense here.
Oh my God, here we go.
You know, but
it does
was
not fit. You must acquit.
Yeah, right, yeah, that was a great defense, right? Put on the glove. So I was like chewing on Ambisol. I was in pain and everything like that. Things weren't going well. Anyway, make a long story short. So now she checks. There's about $5,000 in the pot, and I know this is a bad card for me. And to prove that I knew it was a bad card for me, I bet $1,000. Because I don't want to be faced now with calling an all-in bet on the river. So I bet she checks, and I bet $1,000 into a $5,000 pot just to see what she's going to do. With the intentions of getting off the hand.
If she comes over the top.
If she comes over the top. That's exactly what I was looking to do. So she does come over the top. I didn't even realize the first few. I was about to muck my hand. ESPN edits, right. You know, timeout and everything like that. But I thought for a long time. I made a speech. I was talking out loud. And it's so funny how, as a poker player, when you say something, like people who watch on TV, we say things that we don't mean. As far as I'm saying, gee, I thought you had ace-king. Now I think so. I'm just trying to just get a read on her.
Sure.
At this point, I didn't put her on ace-king. I'm just saying different things to try and get her in some way to react.
Which mm-hmm. I do all the time.
Of course.
I'm saying crazy stuff that makes no sense. I'm just trying to get them
it's
to talk.
It's not what you really think.
It could and it could be.
Yeah. And it's not like you're affecting later action. She's all in.
Yeah, it's just me and her.
Right. Wait, no, she went all in.
No.
She didn't go all in yet.
Oh, she didn't.
No. But we're heads up. When you're heads up, I mean, you're able to talk like that. I'm just looking for a reaction.
Right. Okay.
So she raises it, and I almost lay down the hand twice, and I actually, before I laid it down, not at first, but I noticed that open and straight flush draw. It was a rainbow flop. I didn't even know I had a straight flush draw until I looked a few times, and I'm like, you know what? And then I thought to myself, I'll just go sightseeing. It's not going well. I don't feel well. So I just called.
How much was the raise?
A couple thousand.
Just a couple thousand.
Yeah, if she pushed all in there, I'm sure I would have thrown
it
away.
You would have thrown away. So just a couple thousand.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you bet a thousand into a $5,000 pot. She bets two into a $7,000
pot.
Yeah,
exactly.
You're both kind of feeling around there, it seems.
Yeah, well, she's trying to milk chips, which I can understand.
Exactly. Which she should.
Yeah.
And really, the straight flush draw is very rare hand.
Yeah, it's a move.
It's a very rare hand,
basically.
But it's a very overplayed hand. You didn't overplay it. I mean, it was a small amount to call.
Yeah.
But a lot of people,
lot to my stack, though. I had about 40-something hundred, so another couple thousand is significant.
And just to remind our listeners, right now you've got 8, 9, 10 jack of diamonds.
Right.
She's got queens full of tens. You hit a straight, nothing. You hit a flush, nothing. She's got the full house.
Yeah.
You're down.
Not only that, she has the queen of diamonds in
her
hand. So I'm drawing for a one-outer.
You're down to the seven
of
diamonds.
Which I don't know.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm not aware of that. But, so she raises it, and I, like I said, was going to muck the hand a few times, and I decide just to call. And then on the river, and it's really interesting what happens, because I had 2,700 approximately in chips at this point after I called her raise on the turn. On the river, now she speaks very, she's very soft spoken, and she's in the one seat, I'm in the six seat. So when the river seven diamonds comes, I thought she bet 2,000. When in reality, she bet 3,000, which put me all in. People who think I slow rolled, I have concrete proof I didn't slow roll. I obviously know I didn't, but when you see me, I go, I'm all in. If I thought she had put me all in, I would have just said I call and turned over my hand. But I thought I was raising her 700 more. Now, she's obviously going to call 700 more, but you know what? She has to call me, I'm under the impression.
And, you know, sometimes, in all honesty, just trying to be a little fair to you, once in a blue moon, they're on a bluff with ace high.
They don't have to pay you off.
Right. You want to get that $700.
Of course.
You know what I mean? So most people would probably say, oh, well, she's going to call anything. The pot's so big. Obviously, she's saying, of course she's calling. So in that way, it would be slower. But really, not really, because you're playing.
Well, I'm raising, so that's why I'm not showing the hand, though.
Right.
I'm waiting for her to call. That's why I'm not turning my hand over.
But it was 700 more.
Yeah, but so I'm raising, so I have to wait for her to call, and then I'm going to turn my hand over.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a slow roll. I'm not going to turn my hand over until she calls.
Yeah. I think I had it backwards a little bit. Okay, now I totally see.
So now she does, and it's funny, I didn't even know about the slow roll. I had made a speech that I thought on the turn. I said, I'll just go sightseeing. So before I raise, which I wasn't really raising, but I thought I was raising, I then said on fifth, you know, after the river, oh, I guess I'll go sightseeing. It's what I thought on the turn, and to maybe induce that final call, who knows. I felt that was wrong, and I apologized to Jen for that. I knew nothing about the slow roll until like 6 months later. All of a sudden, I see all this publicity coming out. I slow rolled her. And then I spoke to ESPN. I'm like, go to the tape. She only bet 2,000. I was checking to see if she ever put in the other 700 in chips. That's how much I didn't know about it.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't know until like 6 months after it happened that I was being accused of a slow roll.
See, this is funny. I thought I was maybe asking you a bad question. I want to give you an opportunity to tell your side. In actuality, 100%, that's what it was.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's crazy. I mean, I knew Jennifer for a long time. She was getting over a kidney transplant surgery. I hadn't gotten a chance to say some nice words to her before the tournament started, which I had meant to do because she was doing better.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to see the first opportunity to piss her off and slow roll. You know?
We'll do that to Phil Hellmuth, but we're not going to do that to
exactly. Yeah, there's rumors that Phil won't appear with me again on Poker After Dark.
He said that you would never appear on the show again after that. On that episode, he said you'll never invite
me back. Oh, no, he's saying they won't invite me back.
Yeah.
And the feel was like he's going to do everything in his power to make sure. That was the way I took that statement. You know, like he's trying to even challenge you. But Phil constantly, every time he plays, on my opinion, tries to put people on tilt, tries to talk them and take them out of their game.
Yeah, but
he's not the first person I've ever seen do it to him.
Yeah,
but I've never seen anybody do it to him. But you did it.
Yeah,
it was the first time I've ever seen him.
Yeah, that's my specialty. No, he got what he deserved. I mean, he's not going to get that. He can get that over on some people who are intimidated maybe with TV cameras or maybe the setting. But he's not going to be able to do that to people who are experienced players who aren't fazed by the situation in the least. And, you know, I really don't have that much respect for his game. Everyone can talk about it. I see these young internet guys, and I think their style of play is incredible. And it's definitely the new wave of poker. And I think Phil is probably a very frustrated player these days. I think that he sees that he's just part of the pack. I mean, the game has advanced to the level. There's so many great players, and it's hard to you're not going to dominate poker, certainly, you know, the way it was years ago.
We're talking with Corey Zeidman here in the Lumiere Place final table, Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan. A reminder that next Tuesday we move this show to 2 o'clock in the afternoon Central Time, Tuesdays at 2 on 590 The Fan KFNS. And if you miss the live broadcast, you'll always be able to catch up with us via the podcasts, which are available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
This portion of the show is brought to you by Reactor Watches. Guys, this is the watch that I wear. I wear it day in, day out, 7 days a week, and whatever I'm doing, it makes no difference. If I'm out on the golf course, if I want to hit a wiffle ball against Oral Hershiser, I can wear my Reactor watch and not worry about it.
Yeah.
This thing is so durable, it's amazing.
Not only that, it takes your strenuous activity of lifting chips and throwing them into the pot at a live game.
Yeah.
Or clicking online.
It's amazing. But these guys, they ultimately and unconditionally guarantee this watch that it is the best watch in there, and if anything ever happens, they will fix it for free.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And everywhere I go, I don't care whether it's a tournament, whether it's a friendly game, everybody asks me about the watch. I have taken this off my wrist so many times to hand it to people. It's amazing. It's a gorgeous watch. Guys, if you do not have it or you do want a watch, go to reactorwatches.com. It's absolutely phenomenal, the watches they have there. You need to go there. ReactorWatches.com. Pick out your watch. It's great, guys.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Whether you play poker in a home game, a cash game in a casino, or online, this is the show for you. It's the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Hey, next week on the show, when we make the move to Tuesdays at 2, Dennis will be back from his international travels yet again after a couple of weeks in London, where he played in the World Series of Poker Europe and the EPT London and the EPT High Roller event for his sponsor, PokerStars, and we're proud to have them on here as one of the sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table. If you've never tried online poker, go download that software at PokerStars.net. And while we're talking about online poker, let's also put in a plug for another sponsor, the Poker Players Alliance. That's the group that fights for people who are playing online or in brick-and-mortar casinos like here at the Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, or for people who are just playing in bar tournaments or home games. Like Mike Ice, who won a bracelet this summer, rarely played in brick-and-mortar casinos, didn't play a heck of a lot online, but he and his friends had a home tournament series going on last year, and he won himself into a $1,500 event and walked away with a bracelet. Now, the Poker Players Alliance knows that in some parts of the country, there's a crackdown on home games, just like there is on online poker. And that's what they're fighting against in the courts and in the state courthouses and in the Congress of the United States, where they're supporting both Barney Frank and Bob Menendez's bills. Go to the website, find out about what the Poker Players Alliance does, and then for just $20, become a member and support this group that supports poker players like you and me.
All right, now one final segment with poker pro Corey Zeidman here with Paul Harris, Dennis Phillips, and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan at the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Corey, let's talk about stud, a game I know you love. You were California
yes.
State stud champion
yes.
a few years
mm-hmm.
ago, and you play high-stakes stud
yes.
still.
Uh-huh.
When we say high-stakes stud, what stakes are we talking about?
Well, as high as you can usually get it, pretty much. I've played as high as 1 in 2,000, you mm-hmm. know. Usually the highest you can get these days, though, is maybe 3, 6, 4, 8. The Commerce has a 1, 2, sometimes 2 and 400 stud mm-hmm. game pretty consistently.
Are you seeing more people who know how to play stud, and do you think that's because of the advance of horse as a game that more people
yeah,
are playing?
Yeah, that helps. You know, we see some young guys, you know, start to dabble with stud a bit, which is good to see. I mean, I think it's a great game. It's a very intricate game if you really know how to play it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of facets in the game that people don't realize who don't play it at the highest level. It's a great game. There's tremendous strategy involved. It's not just about, you know, just playing what cards are in front of you. You know, it's similar to Hold'em in certain ways as far as you play the player. You play their board as opposed to your own. There's a lot that's involved.
And you've got to remember cards that were folded. I played stud for years before Hold'em came around because that was
the game.
That
sure.
was all you played, seven-card yeah. stud. And watching folded cards was as much a part of the game as watching the cards that were still up there.
No, of course. No, you have to follow all the cards that are out and but I love it. Yeah, I love studs. Study it or better. It's great games. You outplay players. I mean, that's what it's all about.
Do you see that same aggression from young players in Hold'em that you do? I mean, do you see it in stud the way you do in Hold'em?
Yeah, they try to, but it's a limit game, of course. So we love it in the game. I mean, you know, guy's pushing. He's got ace king. He brings it in with a three, and he's pumping. You know, they love to pump it up, these yeah. young guys. They want to gamble big, and they're frustrated with limits.
Yeah.
So when they play a game like limit stud, they overplay hands constantly. You know, they give it away.
It's hard to get you off a hand when it's limit.
Yeah, I mean, and when I know what they're doing, I mean, these guys are readable. You know, it's usually very apparent what's going on. And then you outplay them. You play what you know they have. In stud, I feel like I know the down cards. You know, I feel I have a huge edge when I play stud. I wish stud was as popular as No Limit Hold'em.
Well, that brings up a good question. You've been coming, I think you came here about 10 years ago and played stud the first time, something
yep.
like that.
Uh-huh.
So you've got a lot of experience here. You've seen a lot of changes. You were there in 03 when Moneymaker did it.
Yeah.
The changes that's happened since then.
Sure.
They made some changes this year. The horse thing not being televised, all of a sudden it's got about half the number of people in it that
yeah.
they had before. They're bringing in the, eliminated the rebuys. What do you see in the future? What changes don't you like? I mean, you know, give us your perspective on this.
Well, I tell you, I mean, I'd like, you know, they seem to be trying to shorten the tournaments to get as many tournaments in as possible. I know it's all about money, and Harris definitely makes that evident. But, you know, so many events, and they shorten the levels to an hour. I don't like that, you know, because I find myself at the table. When you're playing, you know, a limit event, and every hour the limits are going up, and you need to accumulate chips because before you know it, you're in day two and you've got maybe 10 big blinds and no one has big chip stacks, two hands and you're out. You're in big trouble.
The limit, no limit mix that I played was horrible because the limit got up so high. I mean, it was almost a shove fest by about the fourth level.
Yeah, I mean, that's not poker.
It's
we
horrible.
Know that. It's whoever gets lucky and hot at that time is going to win.
That's exactly right.
And that's not what we're after. We want to play. I mean, you want to use your skill and you
exactly.
want to. In fact, even if you win knowing you just got fortunate at the right time, it takes something away from it. You want to outplay the other players. You want to play your best game. And when they make it a shove fest, which is what they do.
No, yep. Wait a second. I'll take like two or three of those.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
no,
true.
No pride.
Never mind.
Two of those.
I take it back. Yeah. Yeah.
I know you guys
yeah, I got lucky.
I'm not a big limit player, but I did play in the 10K limit championship.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like I was short stacked the whole way. Even when I, at the end, when there were 27 people left, I was almost the chip leader. But everybody was short the whole way. It was like two
that's
hands.
That's what happens.
That's what I mean. It's
two hands, you're done.
That's
which
the
is
way
what
it
happened
is.
To me.
Oh,
and I
that's
come
no
in 22nd
good.
With some big hands.
You
that
get into
cracked.
Triple draw, you get into Raj,
it's
you
horrible.
Get into any of these things. And you can go from almost out of it to chip leader in three hands.
See, that's the thing. Like in stud eight or better, you're playing the same structure as, let's say, stud. But in stud 8 or better, the high percentage of the hands are split hands. So
yes.
you're not accumulating chips. You're grinding it out. You're building very slowly. If you're in a three-way action hand, if you do chop it, you're chopping one person's chips between the two of you.
Right.
So you're not all of a sudden here we are, the levels are really high, and you enter a pot, it's a drawing game, you lose a couple hands and you're done.
Well, they've done a good job, and hopefully they're able to listen to the players, because I know in that the world being a world championship event, the 10K, the players were very upset that they felt it was just horrible, the no limit world championship and the other world championships, but this limit one was like just everybody hated it. So hopefully they'll listen and do something about it in a couple of spots, and they're to the players.
They got a problem here.
They have a problem. Yeah, and I was writing columns for All In Magazine, and I was very critical of the World Series in certain areas where, and it all had to do with them not doing enough for the players. I'm not unrealistic, and I'm not looking just to bang a drum, but the players have to be considered in certain aspects. Conveniences and things like structures. These are the most important things to us. I mean, if we're going to put all that money into these tournaments, we want it to be fair and we want to get the proper play for what we're doing. And I received a phone call from an irate Jeffrey Pollock. He had just landed in LAX, and on the plane he read the column I had written and felt I had a personal agenda. So we went at it for about a half an hour. This was last year. And then by the end of the conversation, he had asked me if he said he could see I was passionate about what I was talking about. It wasn't a personal agenda. I don't know what personal agenda. I guess he thought I was working for the Bellagio or something. I don't know. I was going to run a poker tournament out of my backyard maybe. But he asked me to meet with his staff, Jack Eiffel, Gary Thompson at the time, a couple other guys, his upper brass, and asked me to meet with them. And it was very disappointing, I have to say. Extremely disappointing. He wanted us to meet in person, and we did it by conference call. And the first thing they said to me was that that if we could get down to it, because they had another meeting in like an hour, and I was supposed to meet with them and try to help them improve on what they were doing. So when they said that to me, it just told me right then and there, that it was a waste of time. But Jeffrey Pollock, I do believe wants. I know he wants to succeed. But and I know he wants the players to be happy, but it seems like it's too weighted on the buck. Not enough. We have our players committee. I don't know.
Are you on the committee?
No.
Would you want to be on the committee?
I don't know. I've heard certain things this year that I wasn't thrilled about. I know that I heard that a lot of players on the committee, they want to, they have all these prop bets about bracelets and things like that. So as you can enter a tournament 2 hours after it starts and start with the same chip stack. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people felt that that's not fair. I'm one of them. I don't think that's fair. And
why would you think that's not? I'm interested because
what happened was they made this ruling because these guys are entering two tournaments at a time, and they want to enter as many tournaments as they can. So they don't want to be with a shorter chip stack. They want to be able to enter tournaments.
Or they might be in a noon tournament and then are also in a 5 o'clock tournament.
Oh, and so
if they bust out of the first tournament, they don't feel like they've got to have that pressure to get to the 5. If they get to it at 6:45, they're still in there and they're still starting fresh.
So it's a disadvantage for them, obviously, to sign up on time and be blinded out.
Yes.
But how is it necessarily an advantage? And I haven't thought about this at all. I'm interested. I know what you're saying. But how is it really an advantage? I feel like, hey, if you want to come in and we've been playing and now the average stack, if you start with 10,000, now the average stack is 13.
But there is going to be people at your table that have a lot less than the original chip stack. So you're coming into the tournament at your table. Yeah, there's going to be people with more chips, obviously.
This is good stuff. I like this.
You are going to be in a position where you have an edge. And the guys that are going to do that for the most part are experienced pros. So they're not going to be necessarily as intimidated from a bigger chip stack, but they're going to take advantage of shorter chip stacks. I just like the way it used to be. I mean, tournaments start on time. You sign up, the chips are on the table, you get blinded off if you're not there when you're supposed to be there.
Yeah.
I think that's level. I think that's the way it should be.
How was your World Series this year? How many events did you play and how did you do?
Ran poor, did okay in cash games. I played like 6 events. The stud championship, again, the level, I got knocked out like 23rd, 24th. Just if you don't get on a rush, it's just not going to happen.
Is that in the money, 23rd or 24th?
No, it was only top 16 this year. Mm. I have some final tables there, but it's unfortunate.
I want to say this only with fun, and I do 100%. I believe
I'm not thin-skinned.
No,
you can let it fly.
Believe me, I believe you, and I know you're a great player, and I know you've made tons of money.
Are you trying to put him on tilt? Is that what you're trying to do?
I've never heard a player, when they say, oh, I'm running bad on the turns, which I've been saying like my whole life, running bad on the turns, and I'm running bad on the cash games. It's always, you know, I'm killing the cash game.
Yeah, cash games are better. Yeah, no, the cash games. You know, the cash games, it's a much better situation.
Okay. I'm winning all the single-table satellites. I'm winning all the cash games. I'm getting killed in the tournament.
But, Joe, you know that that's true for me. I'm a cash game player. I enter tournaments. I never do well in tournaments. I do well in cash games.
Yeah, you know, tournaments are totally different. People, you know, have tournament chips. They're not risking their money on every call, every card. It definitely makes a big difference.
Well, there's huge swings in the tournament as far as I'm concerned. Cash games, you're fairly consistent. If you lose it, you pull it out of your pocket, you rebuy.
Yeah.
You've got 100%. The players, you do it. You're going to, you know, a good player will be a consistent winner in the cash game, obviously.
Yeah.
In a tournament, you can get nailed, you know, 5-10 tournaments in a row. Even if you're playing the best cards, who cares?
Exactly.
It just happens.
Yeah, that's what happens. So, I mean, a lot of these tournaments, if you don't hit a rush, you're just toast.
The guy that tells me he can't do well in the cash game has been losing for, you know, the last 10, 15 sessions. I'd kind of like to get in a tournament with him, a table with him.
Yeah, right? No, that's great. Yeah, consistent losers are good to have at the table.
Yeah, you do kind of like them. You did well at the Wynn Classic. I
just
realized that.
Yeah,
I forgot about that.
Came down. I got cool
on
the
final
table.
Third, okay.
Yeah, and luckily we made a deal right before I got knocked out.
Instead the of art of the deal. The man's right here.
Did you make a deal?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, excellent.
Great. Yeah, instead of getting 130, I got 210. So it was an $80,000 deal. Yeah, we played we played for 60, and
all right, can I stop you right there?
Sure.
Because some of our listeners, who may not be playing at the level you're at, won't understand what you were just talking about. You made a deal, but you continued to play. Explain that.
Yeah, well, we were down to three of us, and the chip stacks were fairly even, so we took out $60,000 to play for. The final three of us would play for $60,000 and the title and the trophy, and we chopped up the. I guess it was like close to $650,000.
So you took
like
first,
that.
Second, and third place money, took $60,000 out of that total, chopped the rest of it three ways, and whoever was the last man standing.
It was a
little
uneven. It was like a difference of $5,000 here.
But the last man standing would get the whole 60 and the trophy.
Yeah, exactly.
And the reason, one of the main reasons why the players do it, for our listeners, the blinds and antes get so high late, it becomes, I got ace king, I'm forced to call, you're all in with your, you know.
Well, there's less poker playing.
You know, yeah, ace really four. Is. I meant to say ace four versus like king 10. That would be like a common hand that would be going all in.
Yeah, that's
really
what
gambling happens.
As a matter of fact, the guy that won, Ferrara, who won, he had like ace jack against jacks, and he hit two aces, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, it comes down to.
It's a game of skill, but when you get down heads up or three-handed, it does take a lot of the elements out of it.
Sure. If everyone's short.
Well, this is true.
If the structure is where it's played so long and now everyone's short, that's when people try to make the chop deal. If you feel the skill level is the same, you
That's what
it was.
You
try to take that luck factor out of who's just going to get lucky here. Let's do the right thing and just
kind of
chop.
But I love the way you do it because you still have something in the pot. You still were playing for your
we
trophy.
We all want it.
I mean, there you go. Absolutely. It's a perfect way to do it.
Yeah, no, it was the perfect way to do it.
And
I would have obviously.
I'm surprised that size of a tournament they allowed you to do it because a lot of the big tournaments won't. That
was
a
you know,
big tournament.
I was actually a little surprised. They were very agreeable, very accommodating at the Wynn. I guess everybody wants to keep their poker players happy, especially when you're playing in a championship event. And, you know, the more money that's spread out, the more circulates into the poker community.
What are your plans for the fall now that the series is behind you?
Well, I plan on taking some money out of the commerce, you know, going back to stud and...
You live in L.A. full-time?
No, I'm in Florida. I fly to the commerce and stay there for periods of time, you know, at the hotel there.
Florida, that hotbed of poker activity.
Well, you might be coming down to Florida soon enough if they finally get this thing going.
I thought they got it going.
You know, Florida is a very strange state. Until things are actually happening, they're not actually happening.
I thought it was like already. I have friends in the business. They told me it happened.
Well, now the Seminole Indians have to sign to pass it. They have to want it. There's always red tape involved.
And for our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, explain what the problem is with poker in Florida.
The limits. They supposedly passed a bill saying that there could be no limit hold'em, and the buy-in right now is $100, max buy-in.
That's the most you can buy in any time.
At any time. If you're under $100 in your chip stack, you can increase it to $100. But even with that, people have thousands of dollars at the table because guys go all in, and all of a sudden everyone at the table has $500, $700, all of a sudden there's thousands at the table. I don't play in that game ever.
It's actually too small for you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's promise now that eventually it's going to change, hopefully sooner than later.
I talked to a woman who runs one of the rooms down there, and I said, how do you get around? I mean, you got guys down there who have a lot of money, retirees and younger people who have a lot of money, and they really want to play poker, and there's no place near there that they can go. So how do they get around that? She said, well, in my room, we open up at 10 o'clock, and we have the same 10 guys who are always there, and they start the game. And the first guy wins the first hand because everybody goes all in. He now has $1,000. On the second hand, the seat two wins.
Yeah.
Everybody
That's
goes
what
in,
they do. They
10 hands in a row, and at the end of 10 hands, one round, everybody has $1,000, and you can play some poker.
Yeah, no, that's what goes on.
I was thinking that I was sitting here. They must do something like that, and that's the exact organized way.
Now, if Joe ever went down there and was lucky enough to be in seat one, he'd play one hand and leave.
Yeah.
Hey, I got $1,000. I'm up 900. Goodbye.
Yeah, he double crossed him, right? Hey, smart man.
I can run pretty fast.
Yeah. No, isn't it a shame that has to go on, though? It's crazy.
Well, you see, we came from Missouri. We had the loss limit up until November in there, where the maximum we could buy in was 500 every 2 hours. But, of course, people sidestep that like crazy.
Sure.
But at 11:59, you could do 500, and at 12:01, you could do 500 more.
Right.
And not only that, but you didn't have to cash your chips in. You had other people at the table. Believe me, if we had a good 5-10 game going or something, and there was a gentleman there who had donated all his chips to everybody else, we found a way to get him more chips.
Yeah, I'm sure you did.
It wasn't too hard, believe
me. You did.
We called the men's room the auxiliary cage.
Yeah. Listen, that's poker. You know, that's
you
what goes
that
on.
Right. We like to accommodate certain people.
Yeah, I've always seen that. Same people. It's a bad sign when they're accommodating you, though.
That's true.
You know, you would think the guy would catch on to it. The guy would bust out, and immediately five people at the table are, hey, you got any chips? This guy needs chips.
Yeah.
Come on over here. Let's
chips.
Go.
Yeah, bring them over. I know. It's true. No, so you got to do what you got
to
do.
How often do you make the trip from Florida to the Commerce?
At different times of the year, I have more time.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll go several times in 2-3 months. I'll be there for, you know, a month and 6 weeks kind of thing at times. Other times I won't be there for months. It depends, you know, scheduling and if I'm into playing poker. I have a tough time playing all year round.
Do you get calls from your friends in California who say, so-and-so's in town, get out here?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, no, you have that network going.
Yeah.
It's important.
So thanks for coming up. We really appreciate your time today. Good luck with the rest
show.
Of this. And
Thank you. We'd love to
have you back again.
No, I look forward to it. I enjoyed it very much.
Corey Zeidman joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. For Dennis Phillips and Joe the Poker Coach McGowan, I'm Paul Harris. We'll see you next Tuesday at 2 o'clock in our new time slot on 590 The Fan KFNS and our podcast 24/7 on thechipleader.com.